And welcome to another great episode of Information Week Live. This is Information Week Live for the week of April 19th, 2015. I'm your host, Kurt. And you may be hearing some unusual noises behind me. And the reason for that is that I am in the middle of an expo hall at Mandalay Bay Convention Center in Las Vegas. And the network operator and show floor are still under construction. I'm told that my sound is breaking up pretty badly, so I'm going to ask my co-host and companion Dave Wagner to join. I know you had a good this week on high frequency feedback in the organization. What can you tell us about that?
Hi, Kurt. I'm sorry, I couldn't fully understand what you were saying there, so I apologize if I'm talking about the wrong thing, but I think you asked me to talk about my article this week on feedback. I think I had a really interesting take. I talked to Chris Duggan, CEO of BetterWorks, and we talked about how these days we have an awful lot of employees in the enterprise who don't feel they are getting a proper feedback from their managers, from their enterprise. They feel disconnected from the yearly strategies and goals of their company, and they don't see how their work is really connected to the main goals of the company. And what Chris suggested is that we're doing this kind of feedback all wrong. He discovered this himself while jogging, of all things. What he discovered was he was using a Fitbit, and he realized he was losing weight, and he was feeling healthier. And the reason he realized is because he had all of this firsthand, quick, daily feedback from this machine, as well as a way to share that progress in public. And he said, imagine the annual review inside a company as if it was your Fitbit only telling you at the end of the year how many steps you took. And if you think about that, that's exactly what's happening in a lot of enterprises. The only time you get feedback from your managers is once a year. It's very rarely goal-related. It's very rarely helpful. It's a sort of a general discussion. Takes a lot of time, and it doesn't really help you course correct. So what he suggests is that we take that kind of feedback and turn it into much smaller, much lower investment, high frequency feedback from our manager.
Well, that seems like it makes a great deal more sense, and if my voice sounds different, it's because I have changed connections. I hope this is a little bit more clear now than it was before.
Yeah, thank you, Kurt.
One of the things that this brings up is this whole notion, really, of the quantified life. You talk about the Fitbits, and I've been reading some articles lately on, you know, just how important it is to get that regular feedback so that you can pay attention to the right things. But also, and I found this interesting, a statistic that said that about half the people who use one of these fitness trackers or other tracking devices abandon it within 6 months because either they're not figuring out how to use the information or, you know, they just don't see the results. Do you worry about that being a problem when we're talking about the enterprise situation, that it's one thing to have all the data, it's something else entirely to really be able to make good use of it?
Absolutely. It does take a commitment inside the organization. But before I talk about it from an organizational point of view, I'd like to just remind you that only 11% of New Year's resolutions are kept more than 3 months. So if people who are buying a Fitbit to lose weight are getting 50% success rate, they're blowing away what happens if they don't use a quantified life. So that alone sounds to me like a success, even though 50-50 is not so hot. So back to the enterprise, the interesting thing about that is what Chris said, and I tend to agree with him, is that the journey of unearthing all of this is what transforms an enterprise into wanting more of it. What happens is that these people who completely feel divorced from their company's goals, who get no recognition for the amount of work they do, when they turn these things public, when they say, here are my 3 to 5 goals in a day, and this is how I'm achieving them, and people start to use the equivalent of a like button or a yes, I see you, you're doing a great job, that creates a feedback loop, a positive one, where people start to engage more and want more. It's when you don't do something in public with that kind of high-frequency connection that you don't feel that, and that's when you give up. So chances are a large percentage of the people who are using Fitbit and failing aren't sharing it with their friends. Sharing with your friends, it makes something far more successful than if you just try to do something in private.
You know, that is really interesting, and it brings up something. I was having a conversation with one of my friends in an organization, a fairly large organization, where this whole notion of goals, getting feedback on them, and what those goals mean in terms of compensation and recognition. It was a really interesting discussion, and one that has left this person very frustrated because of an apparent disconnect between what your goals are and how you are evaluated by the organization. You know, our colleague Chris has joined us. Chris Murphy, who is the editor of Information Week. Chris, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thank you.
And I hope that you were able to hear some of the conversation we were having, this whole notion of getting regular feedback on what you're doing and how important that is. Now, I know that you are a very athletic kind of guy. Are you using one or more of these fitness trackers to keep up with how you're doing?
I'm a total Strava addict, which is an app that's used for biking. I use for biking, for tracking my bike rides.
Okay, so tell us just a little bit about your experience. Have you found that you are seeing better results because of what you're seeing in terms of your regular feedback?
I think that would be an exaggeration to say I'm getting any faster or riding any more. But it is, it's more of a amusement than anything. I just enjoy keeping track of it. It is fun to see what other people are doing. So, you missed going out with some of your friends riding. You can see what did they do, and so there's a little bit of that. There's a little bit of the. It's not so much, I'm falling behind fear as that would have been fun. I should get out more. So it's that way. But what it does do is it keeps you from kidding yourself of thinking, I think I've been riding as much this year as I did last year. And then you look and you say, about 500 miles less than last year. And so it does keep you from kidding yourself.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Dave was talking about his article on high-frequency feedback that this week. And I was wondering, you know, many companies, he's absolutely right, you get formal feedback once a year. I know that, in our organization, there are certain parts of the quantifiable piece of what we're doing where we get feedback on a much more frequent basis. But is it realistic to think that we could be in a situation where people, let's say, who aren't either call center employees or salespeople, could get feedback on their performance on a daily basis? Is that even realistic?
Well, I think if you think about agile development, that's a huge piece of the agile development process. If you stand up every single day, you have these stand-up meetings to say, where are we at in this project? It's not individual, like, how are you doing? But it is the idea of, okay, what are we doing today? What did we do yesterday? What roadblocks are we facing that are keeping us from getting something done today? It's not individual performance feedback, but it is on the project level. And it's a big reason, I think, that people like, a lot of people like working in that mode, is they know these things don't have to fester. If we've got a problem, we're going to talk about it tomorrow.
Right.
Well,
yep,
we all...
Oh, I'm sorry, Kurt.
No, go ahead, Dave. I was just going to
That's exactly something that Chris Duggan from BetterWorks mentioned in my interview with him, is that it isn't merely the feedback process which is over-engineered in enterprises. We have too many arcane processes. One of the things he talked about is he went worked with a company that had over 50,000 spreadsheets designed purely on keeping track of employee performance. And that process is just not tenable. And I think what we're seeing is a movement in, as Chris mentioned, in agile development that's starting to take over the rest of the enterprise. Let's make this work. Let's make it fast. Let's make it agile. Let's make it high frequency, low investment. And I think it's a great movement.
Well, we've also been joined now by another colleague, Kelly Sheridan. Kelly, first, welcome to Information Week Live.
Hi, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
And, Donna, we've been talking so far about Dave Wagner's article on high-frequency feedback. And I know that you spend a lot of time covering Microsoft. And the whole Microsoft band thing, you know, Microsoft seems to be doing a lot to enable the high-frequency feedback, both from an athletic side and, you know, Microsoft does do a lot to give you tools that can be used in agile development and an agile organization. You know, with the whole notion of moving things to the cloud and all that, do you see the idea of high-frequency feedback and high-frequency activity being something that Microsoft is, whether as a primary objective or not, really enabling for their customers?
Well, I think that they're making a lot of progress with the band. We actually just had an article up this week on the band in terms of a fitness tool. And I know that Chris was talking about Strava. I love Strava, and I think that being able to get feedback like that is really useful in terms of fitness, but I haven't really explored yet what it means for the enterprise.
Well, I think it's fascinating. One of the words we're hearing over and over and over again is consumerization. It's one of the things when I interviewed Chris Anderson a couple of weeks ago, we see it with the different BYOD programs that exist or don't in different companies. And, you know, it seems that this might be yet another of those areas where people are becoming accustomed to high-frequency feedback in their fitness or their daily life, and now they want that same level of feedback in their enterprise lives. Chris, what do you think of that? Do you think this is just another facet of consumerization in the enterprise?
Well, I don't know. I think it's definitely coming. I mean, it's the Internet of Things, right? You can track more things, and then it's just a matter of deciding, is it worth tracking, and can we put can we put a dollar amount on what the tracking is, and can our culture handle it and all that. But I mean, I've written about a company that's working on mining equipment where they're going to track essentially performance of that machine. So if it should take three scoops to fill a dump truck and it's taking four, it'll get that instant feedback, and they'll be able to say, hey, one of your trucks is underperforming. And then you can go out there and you can go talk to that driver and figure out, is your machine malfunctioning? Are you digging too deep? Or are you not digging deep enough? And that kind of Internet of Things tracking, if you're in an industrial environment, I think that's only going to grow. Whether that's something that people are going to love and relish, well, it depends how the feedback's going.
That's what the Apple Watch is all about, right? And that's another thing Kelly covers. You know, the Apple Watch is to make sure that we're getting all the data we're missing when we put our phone down, right?
Yeah, I just had the opportunity to try it out today. I went over to the Apple Store.
Okay, well, now with that as a lead-in, I've got to ask, Kelly, what do you think, based on your experience, what do you think of the Apple Watch?
It's hard to say, because as a physical device, I really liked it. I know that a lot of reports were saying that it's really heavy and that it was clunky, but I didn't find that at all. I thought it was actually a really great-looking product. It was comfortable. It wore well. But you still need the iPhone to achieve the bulk of its functionality. So I think that really takes away from it, because what's the point in having a watch if you're just going to have your phone on you anyway? But I think that they're really trying to develop the watch so that you can do a lot of the phone functions straight from your wrist without taking the phone out. But I think right now they're still working on it. We're still in smartwatch 1.0 here, so obviously there's a lot of room for improvement. But I've had a lot of fun playing around with it. I thought it was a cool device.
Well, I find it fascinating. I'm seeing a bunch of articles right now on enterprise apps for the Apple Watch. And when I talked to Bernd Lukert of SAP, he very heavily hinted that in a couple of weeks at SAP's Sapphire conference, we're going to see SAP with results displayed on the Apple Watch. Chris, are you ready for a world in which we're doing our enterprise activities on our wristwatches?
You know, if it's hard to do data visualization now, wait till you start getting it on your watch. I mean, then we're not always that great at setting priorities of this is the one thing we're going to watch. We're going to observe, to not confuse the terms. And if you have that little space, are we going to be clever enough to say, this is the one number we're going to deliver from our ERP that's valuable enough that we would put it on our watch all the time? One of my favorite business guru writers is Jim Collins, and he talks about what's the number that drives your business? What's that one number that you really, really want to watch, you know? Some number, you know, X over what is the number that you want to watch all the time, observe all the time, and are we smart enough to know what we should put on that watch?
Dave, how about you? You are often a calm voice of reason when it comes to new technology. What do you think about enterprise wristwatch apps?
I think this is the first time I've been called a calm voice of reason. I have to say, I don't see the smartwatch. I have a phone 6 inches from where I hold my watch with a bigger screen and more capability. I've never understood the value of it. I never put my phone away. Maybe I should. Maybe that's a problem. So I'm not sure. But I have seen a few applications, and I think Kelly can talk to this better, because I believe Kelly wrote an article on enterprise applications for Apple Watch this week. But I've seen a few applications that interest me, like Salesforce, I believe, is doing one. And I can see how that would be a really useful thing for your Salesforce, using Salesforce. But maybe Kelly's the person to tell us about this.
Kelly, that sounds like one of those over to you moments.
Sorry to put you on the spot, Kelly.
Oh, no worries at all. Yeah, I actually just finished a roundup yesterday on some of the different capabilities that Apple Watch will have that are more targeted towards businesses. And there are a few third-party apps that specifically lend themselves to business purposes. Like there's one app coming out called I don't think it's going to be built in on the Apple Watch, but Apple already has it on their website. It's called Invoice to Go. So people who are paid by the hour, the app uses geofencing technology. So when you step onto your work site, it'll immediately start clocking your hours. So it makes it easier to keep track of time, and you can get notifications of payments and send invoices from the watch. So that's pretty cool. But in terms of more everyday enterprise use, there's another app that I really liked when I was putting together this roundup called HipChat. And a lot of these apps are obviously already on iPhone, and they're moving over to watch because they just lend themselves to a more wearable device. So the way HipChat works is it brings notifications to whoever's wearing it so colleagues can more easily interact with one another. But what's cool about this is that when you get a HipChat notification on your watch, you can send a quick touch response. So you can send a thumbs up or a thumbs down or like an okay or a question mark if you don't understand what the person said. So the watch kind of serves as like a preview of the message. So you know whether or not you have to like go digging around for your laptop or your phone to talk further about a subject, or if you can just say, okay, thumbs up, I get what you're talking about. So I think certain apps like that can make enterprise communications more efficient, if you will. We're seeing quite a bit on the messaging front when it comes to business apps.
High frequency, low investment.
Yeah.
Well, you know, to continue that whole frequency and investment theme, Chris, you were talking with me earlier today about an article we've recently done. A bunch of people are paying attention to this, but the whole idea of the Amazon Web Services and what's going on there, the interest and the chatter level really has picked up on that in the last week or two, hasn't it?
Right. Well, the buzz came because yesterday, Amazon, for the first time, said how much revenue it's driving from its cloud computing business. So Amazon, as we know, rents out infrastructure as a service. It used the capability and talent that it developed in running its retail operations and used that to sell computing services. And yesterday, it announced for the first time how big a business it is for them.
Well, when you saw those numbers, was there anything there that surprised you, or did it kind of fall into what you always imagined it would be?
Well, in terms of it surprised me. Well, I expected to see a big and fast growing business, and that's what it is. But if you're not surprised to see that Amazon could build what has been a $5 billion business the last year. Outside of what a lot of people would see as its core capability of being a retailer, to launch a technology business and to build it into a $5 billion a year business, and at a growth rate, if you look at that's the past 12 months. If you look at what it did in the last quarter, it's on a run rate of more than $6 billion. So it's grown more than over the last year, grown more than. More than 40%, it might even be 50%. I can't remember the exact number, but so it's fast growing. It's a big business by any measure, and it's something that, you know, when we look and people say every company should be a technology company, boy, they sure embrace that message.
Kelly, I wanted to ask you a question. I know that Amazon is not the area that you focus your attention on the most, but they're not the only company that is pushing this idea of, you know, being the infrastructure for lots of different people. Microsoft is really pushing in that direction from the applications that it's delivering via the cloud to its Azure, its whole public cloud infrastructure. Do you think that Microsoft sees themselves as being in direct competition with Amazon in the cloud space?
I'm not sure about direct competition, but they're definitely pursuing their efforts on cloud. Actually, Microsoft just had its third quarter financial earnings call yesterday, and we learned that their commercial cloud revenue has seen 106% growth or something crazy like that. So I really think that if they're not already a direct competitor with Amazon, then they very well could be in the future, because that's clearly where they're headed. It's definitely a big area of growth for them.
Yeah, I think when you look at business workloads and where are people going to put their business computing workloads, I think Microsoft and Amazon are definitely competing for that kind of work in the public cloud, and they're embracing the competition. They're matching prices. They're not shying from the competition.
Well, one of the things that's interesting about this competition is that it's very rare that a business sector can see at least two companies seeing triple figure percent growth in a year, which means that cloud is growing so fast that you don't necessarily need to compete in the truest sense of I need to beat the other guy, but you need to make sure that you're getting a portion of what is clearly an ever-growing pie.
You know, I think that's a key thing, that as much as there has been talk for the last decade about whether or not cloud was for real, and, you know, with all of the problems that people keep coming up with about the cloud, the fact is that it's growing like gangbusters and doesn't, frankly, show any real signs of slowing down.
Right. It seems more like a race than a competition. It's not a fight for territory yet. That's something that happens in a mature industry. This is more of a race to get to that point.
It's a land grab, right?
Like
once they get in here, we think we can keep them.
Right.
But they're making the decision now to move workloads, to get apps into the cloud and the like, and where are they going to go with that first move with it? Because once you're there, well, it's easier to keep them.
Yeah, good analogy.
Well, we've been talking about a lot of stuff. Kelly, I've got to ask you, what was going on other than your exciting visit to the Apple store to try on the Apple Watch? You know, what was going on in your part of the world this week that we all should be talking about?
The past few days have been a lot of activity for Windows 10. Microsoft gave us a new mobile build on Wednesday for anyone who's trying the Windows 10 on mobile devices. And they gave us a desktop preview on yesterday, actually, or late Wednesday, but I downloaded it and I tried it yesterday. And there's a lot of really cool new features. They fixed a lot of the bugs that were in the last build, so that was good. And I would say that the most recent preview version is definitely my favorite by far. They made some fixes to the new browser, so it's more speedy, and it's become my default on my Surface device. And they made different upgrades to the mail apps and the calendar apps, so it's really coming together. And while there are obviously still a lot of bugs, I think it'll be ready by the time it's supposed to launch this summer.
Well, you know, to me, one of the interesting things about all of this, and Microsoft has been talking about it, I find in my own work, and since I know that, you know, I am the perfectly average computer user, I feel this applies to everyone. One of the things that I look for now is an application and an experience that works across all my platforms. You know, I want to be able to move my work from platform to platform, from place to place, from situation to situation, and never miss a beat. And when I have talked to application people in all kinds of companies, they really do say that what I want isn't unique, that there are a lot of people who want the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's something that they're really trying to go for in Windows 10. Actually, the newest version of the build is more optimized for tablets, so you can go from desktop to tablet use just by taking off the keyboard. And when you switch to tablet mode, it makes all the icons spaced further apart, and it makes some icons bigger, so they're more touchable. And it's something that they mentioned that they were working on when they first started development, but it's something that's really obvious now in the most recent build.
Now, Dave, I know that you are very proud of the fact that you have not fallen under the influence of Cupertino. You are a defiantly non-Apple user in your chosen computing environment. But, what do you think? With all this going on with Windows 10, do you think that this is going to be the level of development that that brings the world more heavily back into the Microsoft camp? Is this going to reverse some of the trends that we've seen over the past, 5 to 10 years?
I don't know if Apple has anything to worry about, but I think Android does. I'm in the uncomfortable situation that I am an Android phone and tablet user and a Windows laptop and desktop user. I would love to change that, but I am not that thrilled with Chrome as a desktop or laptop choice. And up until recently, I wasn't that thrilled with any Windows mobile devices. I love the Surface, but I've never felt like their phones have been aimed at a relatively high-level user, particularly somebody who does both work and gaming on their same mobile device. So as Windows phones have improved, I'm getting more excited. I'm predicting that when I upgrade my phone in the fall, that I will find a Windows phone I fall in love with, but I can't say for sure. But I think Android has more to worry about. I don't think Apple users, iOS users, are going to suddenly pick up Windows 10. That's a bridge too far, I think, for most people these days. But I do think a lot of Android people would like to bring sanity back to their apps.
I don't know. App sanity seems to be asking an awful lot in today's environment. Oh, heavens. Well, I think it's we've talked about a lot of frequency-based things. It's been a good conversation, but we're hitting the time when it's time to talk about the Geekcast, because that's how we like to finish up every Friday's episode. So Dave, I have been on the road. I've been in the middle of this convention center. Tell me what's going on with the Geekend this week.
Sure, thanks. I actually waded neck deep into a pretty big scientific controversy this week. If you have been flying, you may not know, but scientists in China made the first attempt at altering the DNA of a human embryo. And this has long been considered off-limits by Western science. Western science believes that it is unethical, and they believe that it's a particular danger to the species. And what I found particularly frustrating about this is that much of the talk was, even though it's a scientific community, was of a hysterical nature. One of the things that bothered me was it almost smacked of a certain amount of racism or hypocrisy for Western science to say, Eastern scientists aren't capable of taking the appropriate precautions to do this in a good way, or that they don't know how to be ethical. But what I decided, instead of wading into that debate, because that debate is dangerous and fraught with religion, what I decided is that there's a much simpler way to deal with this. And that is, when you look at the technology, what is the quickest way to actually eradicate disease, which is the goal of messing with DNA of an embryo? And what I discovered is that if I were betting as a startup, as a venture capitalist, giving money to this research, the Chinese choice of trying to edit DNA at the embryo level is the least likely to succeed between choices of developing traditional medicine or altering adult DNA in a body. MIT and several others have already developed ways to edit DNA in laboratory conditions in a safe way, whereas the Chinese effort has failed up to this point. They're ready to start human trials probably as early as next year. So my take on it was, we're looking at this the wrong way. Instead of spending a huge amount of time putting moral angst into this, let's just let the economy take over, because it's going to.
You know, that's fascinating. And to me, the whole notion of the moral component is an interesting one, not least because I was fascinated by all the people at the last Maker Faire I attended, the one in Orlando last fall, who were very much into biohacking. Now, I don't think anyone there was publicly talking about biohacking on a human cellular level, but the idea of hacking genomes, of hacking organisms at a cellular level, is not something that is limited to large government-sponsored activities. I mean, there are a lot of people who are deeply into the possibilities here.
Yes, it's true, and it does create some fear. There's the long-held fear of the couple choosing to alter the gender or the hair color or the eye color or the skin color of their baby. And that is a real ethical argument that we need to discuss as a culture. And I'm not trying to sidestep that. But when it comes to curing disease, I think we can all agree that that whether it's a pill or whether it's active gene splicing, we are, in fact, altering DNA on a daily basis in this country. Some of our food does it, some of our medicine does it, and it's just our environment does it. So if we're going to start saying we're never allowed to alter anybody's DNA ever again, we're going to have to backtrack on an awful lot of stuff. A lot of it's unintentional. At least this is done intentionally with science and understanding and an attempt to do it in a safe way that doesn't have unintended consequences. So I think one of the things that really needs to come to this is that we need to separate this debate into, what are we doing individually? What is this research doing? What is that research doing? Where do we draw the line? As opposed to the sort of grand kind of debate. We're seeing the same thing with genetically modified food, right? The GMO debate is about GMO is good, GMO is bad. Well, that's silly. Some genetically modified food is fantastic. It's going to save the world. It's going to literally give food to people who are starving to death. Some of it is dangerous. We need to start parsing that better.
Well, I want to start parsing it with our other friends around the virtual table here. And, Kelly, I'll start with you. What do you think? Are you ready to jump on the biohacking bandwagon?
Not exactly a question I ever really thought I would be asked on this show. But I think Dave is right. I think this is something that we all need to discuss as a culture, because he makes a good point. I mean, we're altering DNA on a daily basis, but I think that there could be a point where you take it too far.
Very, very well spoken and considered. Chris, how about you? Are you going to be the voice of absolutism on one side or the other? Or you know, what do you think about the idea of the serious human-based biohacking?
I'm sorry, Kurt, did you say me? Was that my question?
I did indeed. That
okay.
Was
the yeah, I think Dave put it well. You know, I mean, this is going to be a debate that is happening. I don't think we're running from this debate. I think it's an extremely public debate that will continue. I don't have much more to add to what Dave said on that.
I think it's one of those issues where we all have some ideas, but it is one that causes us to think. And to me, it's interesting for us to talk about these, because there are so many technology areas where we have pursued the technology without the conversation happening, until we reach the point when it's in our face and the conversation is unavoidable, and the consequences are already at a point where it becomes obvious to everyone that the conversation should have started many iterations ago. So, Dave, thanks for bringing this up. A great topic. I look forward to seeing some of the conversation online over this one.
Thanks, Kurt.
Well, that brings us to the end of another Information Week Live. Now, if you love radio, and I hope you do, well, this is your lucky Friday, because I'll be back here at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, that's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, with Interop Radio right here from the Network Operations Center as it is being built in the expo space of the Mandalay Bay Convention Center. I hope you will be able to join me. To find out the URL for that, you can go to informationweek.com, head over into the Interop tab at the top of the page, click, and you'll see an article that talks about all of our Interop radio shows for the coming week. I want to thank all of our guests for being here today. We had Kelly Sheridan, we had Chris Murphy, we had Dave Wagoner. Each and every one of you, thanks so much for being with us today.
Fun as always, Kurt. Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Kurt.
And as always, thank you for being part of Information Week Live. You know, the listener, you are key to what we do here. Now, if you're listening to this in an on-demand version, thank you. We're glad to have you as part of the community. But I want to remind you that Information Week Live happens live every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. And when it is happening live, there's a great conversation taking place at informationweek.com around the program. We'd love to have your voice in that conversation. Please plan to join us next week and in all the Fridays to follow. Well, for all of us here at Information Week, I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, saying thanks so much for being with us. Hey, I'll see you back here on the radio in just about 2.5 hours. See you soon.